Opinions expressed in the following program are those of the host and guests and do not represent the opinion of KMBZ or Entercom Kansas City. The views expressed on Health Talk are those of the medical professional only. They are not meant to serve as medical advice. If you have a health issue, see your doctor or visit a clinic.
This is Health Talk, a weekly look at a healthcare topic important to you. Health Talk examines a healthcare issue with a medical professional and takes your phone calls. Health Talk brought to you by Fresenius Medical Care and Midwest Nephrology Consultants, with 13 clinics and offices throughout the Kansas City metro area, and by the Center for Practical Bioethics, raising and responding to ethical issues in health and healthcare for 25 years. Now here's your host for Health Talk, Laurel Labou.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of Health Talk. I am Laurel Labou, and our topic this evening is frankly something few people want to talk about: serious illness, the end of life, and preparing for that eventuality. There's a day coming up when all of us will be encouraged to have that talk where we cover those issues and put them down on paper. It's called National Healthcare Decisions Day. It's on Friday, April the 16th. And joining us now to talk about it is John Carney, the Vice President for Aging and End of Life at the Center for Practical Bioethics, and Dr. Ed Kramer, a family practice physician from Lee's Summit. Good evening, gentlemen. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Good evening, Laurel.
Well, John, why don't we start with you? Why is National Healthcare Decisions Day so important?
Well, for most Americans, as you mentioned, we aren't very good at having this discussion, and it's very important that we be able to name somebody who can speak for us when we can no longer speak for ourselves, because it's going to happen to about 85% of us at some point in our lives.
Those conversations are those that we tend to avoid.
They are, and we really... Most Americans, most adult Americans, don't have the conversation. Only about 30% of us actually have filled them out. So there's a big gap between those of us that actually do it and those of us that are going to need it at some point in time. And we've got to fill that gap.
And a lot of surveys show that people indicate that they understand why it's important. And that's about 80%, 70 to 80%. But the actual numbers are about 30% that actually
do
it.
That's right. It's a big gap between those of us who say it's important and say we should do it, and the ones of us who actually do it. We do have a little bit higher participation by older people, but it's just as important for young people to name that person who's going to speak for us.
So what's going to happen on National Healthcare Decisions Day, April the 16th?
Well, we're really trying to get a lot of awareness around the country to help Americans just be able to see this as an important event, and we try to kind of couple it with the taxes that we got to file, so death and taxes, which always kind of go together.
So that was done on purpose.
Yes, it was. Mm-hmm. It was. I'm not sure that people really like it, but it's a topic that neither one of us, you know, neither topic we really want to talk about much. So it's just to basically get people's awareness and say there is a point in time that we should be thinking about this, and actually we should be doing it on an annual basis. And so it's important to kind of associate it with some other maybe dreaded topic that we have in our lives.
Dr. Ed Kramer, you're in the front lines of this with your role as a family practice physician and as the chairman of the Ethics Committee at Lee's Summit Hospital.
Correct.
Talk to us about what kind of situations you experience as people go through a very difficult time and having to make very difficult decisions.
Well, Darrell, my involvement usually is as the chair of the Ethics Committee at our hospital. And by that time, a person usually has had a very serious, if not devastating, event such as a stroke. And also by the time we get involved, there have been efforts to resolve some of the questions as to, you know, what do we do now? What procedures do we do or not do? So our ethics committee usually gets involved at a time when we really need to bring people together and really emphasize communication for the most part. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting people together in the same room, doctor, family, and just trying to identify what the ethical question is and what the conflict is, and then how we might go about solving that.
What's the medical situation typically? Is it a serious condition, of course, but someone's on a ventilator, or and the question is whether or not to take a person off a ventilator or other life-sustaining kind of measure?
That certainly can be one of the most difficult situations if somebody's on a ventilator. I would say more commonly, at least in our experience, we see more questions about whether it is the right thing to do to put a feeding tube in, a permanent feeding tube, and then provide nutrition and fluids through that feeding tube on an ongoing basis. Oftentimes, perhaps the person has had a stroke or there's some other reason why they can't swallow. And then you're really faced with the question, do we do this invasive procedure that is going to pretty much commit somebody to ongoing treatment like this, or do we allow what we would call natural death to occur if someone has that devastating a stroke, for example? The natural outcome of that would be that they would die from that. And those are tough decisions, especially for families, and especially if they haven't had the guidance from some sort of advanced directive or conversation with their loved one prior to that.
So there could be a lot of confusion, conflict?
Absolutely. And confusion, conflict, sometimes guilt, sometimes just, poor communications amongst family members, all of that.
And John, this is going to become more and more of an issue as we in the baby boomer generation start getting older and start having chronic conditions. And that's where it really starts coming to be an issue, right?
Yeah, and most of us really don't understand advanced disease. We really don't ask our doctors about them. Our doctors don't explain different kinds of conditions that can happen to us. Ed's points about, the fact that if you do something, it feels different when you undo it than if you never do it at all. And that can be very devastating to a family because they feel like, in a sense, that even though it's not benefiting the patient, somehow they're responsible for their death if they withdraw a treatment, take a patient off a ventilator, remove a feeding tube. It isn't that case, but it feels like that. It's a very visceral kind of experience for families. And it's a tough decision. And if you really haven't had a good understanding about where the patient is in the course of their disease, this is sudden to you as a child or a spouse, and you really don't know what to do, and doctors are telling you different things. It can be very confusing and really, really heart-rending for the families to go through these kinds of experiences.
Well, it's very hard, Ed, with people in a hospital. They're placed in an environment that, of course, they're not used to, and then mm-hmm. they're being hit with all kinds of medical professionals that are coming to them at one time, five or six doctors at a time, all the nurses and caseworkers. It's tough.
It can be very confusing. I mean, you have a loved one who is suddenly in this horrible situation, due to their illness or injury, and then everyone comes together, and of course, the initial response is, well, let's, do everything we can, for mom or dad or whatever. And then you mentioned the several doctors. Oftentimes, complicated cases like this, there are, there's a primary care doctor, there's multiple specialists, mm-hmm. and typically they're making rounds at different times of the day. So, a person in the waiting room, for example, or in the ICU waiting area, they just may get several different impressions from the four or five different doctors who walk through that door in the course of a day to explain the situation.
And we're also finding out that some disease processes really don't lend themselves to some of those life-sustaining treatments. Like advanced Alzheimer's, there's a good amount of evidence now that's been mounting over the last 10 years that shows that people in advanced stages of Alzheimer's actually don't benefit from feeding tubes. Yet it's a natural inclination for a family to ask about it when the ability to swallow or even the ability to eat, by mouth becomes impossible for the patient. And so there's this natural instinct that we all have to say, well, we're not going to stop feeding mom. We're not going to starve her to death. And at the same time, you have to understand that in some cases, it's the progressive disease that's actually, causing the organs to function differently than they have in the past, and trying to put liquid and nutrition into somebody who can't metabolize it is not a good idea.
Our topic this evening is having the talk about what you want for your medical care during a serious illness or at the end of life. Our guests are John Carney, Vice President of Aging and End of Life at the Center for Practical Bioethics, Dr. Ed Kramer, a family practice physician from Lee's Summit. The number to call if you have a question, 576-7798. That's 576-7798. We'll take a break. Take a break right here and be back on Health Talk after this on News Radio 980 KNBC. Laurel LeBoux back on Health Talk, sponsored by Fresenius Medical Care and Midwest Nephrology Consultants, 13 clinics and offices throughout the Kansas City metro area. For more information, call 816-434-2597 or visit ultracare-dialysis.com. Our guests this evening, John Carney, Vice President of Aging and End of Life at the Center for Practical Bioethics. Dr. Ed Kramer is with us as well. He's a family practice physician from Lee's Summit, Missouri. We're talking about National Healthcare Decisions Day, a day to make your wishes known for medical care during a serious illness or the end of life. 576-7798 is the number. We have a couple of calls on the line. We'll go right to those calls. And Carl is on the line. Hello, Carl.
Good talking about me.
Hi, what can we do for you?
Hey, I just wanted to give a shout out to my dad and let him know that me and Tessa, his little daughter, both love him.
Oh, well, that's very nice. So it is the Carl. Ed, is that your son?
I believe that is my son, Carl.
Now, he claimed that, you know, he wasn't going to give a call that you weren't listening, Carl. So.
I'm glad you guys are listening. Hi, Tessa.
Hey, Dad. Yeah, we are listening. Don't worry.
Love you guys.
Okay.
Even Akko and Dave.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Carl. We appreciate your call. 576-7798 is the number. Let's go to Kevin in Kansas City. Hello, Kevin.
Yes. Laurel, I had a question concerning the advance directive.
Sure.
My attorney told me that the advance directive alone really doesn't have a lot of positive force behind it unless you also have it with a durable medical power of attorney.
Okay. John Carney, can you address that?
Well, there's a lot of truth to that. That it really helps to have an agent named. It's almost more important to have an agent named than to actually have your wishes, your healthcare directive, very explicit. But one is just as important as the other if there isn't anybody in your life that you can actually have step forward. So, you know, having a stranger actually be appointed who really doesn't understand your wishes is really not the best thing either. So having the conversation is the most important thing. But there is an obligation of healthcare professionals in any setting to honor a directive when it's presented. So they have a duty to practice. Their license really requires them to honor those directives. But it is far more important in order for you to be able to have that advocate for you to explain why it is that you thought this was important or why, you know, how you really want these wishes honored. So it really is a kind of a dual document. And that's why the Caring Conversations booklet has those on one side is the healthcare directive, and on the other side is the appointment of the agent.
Dr. Kramer, do you have anything to add to that?
Well, I would just probably take that one step further, and in addition to having the advance directive and the durable power of attorney identified, and then having that conversation not just with that person, but to kind of broaden that circle as much as you can, and talk with other family members and friends, so that when people kind of congregate in the intensive care unit, if you're having an issue, everybody kind of understands where you're coming from on this.
That good, Kevin?
Yeah, that helps quite a bit. For myself, it's a situation where I have gastroparesis and type 2 diabetes, and right now I'm in fairly good health, but I'm anticipating probably in a few years there might be a change in situation. So.
Okay, well, we appreciate your call, Kevin. Take care.
Okay, thank you.
All right, bye-bye. 576-7798 is the number if you have a question. John, you mentioned Caring Conversations, and that's a tool, a booklet to help people have these conversations.
It really is. The first section of the book is really around clarifying your preferences and expressing your wishes and values so that they're clear to your not only the people that you want to know to instruct about your wishes, but also to help you clarify your own values and preferences that you may not have thought clearly through for, you know, a good portion of your life. So the first, I don't know, 6 or 8 pages or something really kind of help you do that. And then it goes into the actual document itself and says, okay, now we're going to start filling this out. Gives you the option of filling out the directive itself, the healthcare directive, which says kind of what you do and you don't want, the kinds of treatments that you would consider or not consider, and why you would consider those. And then the appointment of the agent. And I think the agent is actually the first side of the document, because we consider that far more important than anything. It's just you can name that agent and have that conversation about the things in the booklet and not ever fill out that second side of the document if you want to.
576-7798 is the number if you have a question for our guest today. And we're talking about advanced directives and making your wishes known for medical care during a serious illness or the end of life. That sounds like a lot of paperwork, John.
Well, it really isn't when you're finished with the document. I mean, it can be a lot of work to spend the time going through it, but it's basically notes to yourself and notes to your loved ones that you're going to share this with, so that it really is more about the conversation. What we're trying to do is get people to have that talk that says these things are important to me and be able to share your thoughts. And most of us don't have this, you know, at the tip of our tongue. We haven't thought about it a lot. So the reflection time is important. And so the booklet allows you to be able to do that. The document itself is really quite simple. The appointment of the agent is simply says, this is the person I want to make decisions for me, and here's the authority I give him. And if you want to limit that authority to make certain kinds of decisions, you limit it right there in the document, sign it, get it notarized. In the state of Missouri, you only have to have witnesses in the state of Kansas. And then if you want to go ahead and fill out that other side that says, here's the things that I want and don't want, you can do that. So that helps then inform your agent about the kinds of things that are important to you.
Dr. Kramer, what kind of situations do you face in general terms with family dynamics and going through these documents and people really trying to figure out what their loved one wants in a very serious situation?
Well, again, Laurel, when I'm involved, it's usually with the ethics committee at our hospital, and family dynamics are very important because, believe it or not, sometimes there's really more emphasis on. Of course, they're feeling sad and maybe even starting to grieve and realize that they may be losing this loved one. So there's a lot of focus on those kinds of feelings. And we have to sort of direct them at times as a group to say, well, what would your mom want us to do in this situation? And sometimes it's just like a light goes off, well, gosh, she wouldn't want this or that, or she would. She was a fighter. She always wanted to, stay alive, regardless of whatever. It's a matter of trying to get them to focus on that person's goals and what they thought of as quality of life and what they really wanted us to do in that case.
576-7798 is the number. Let's go to Dorothy. Hello, Dorothy.
I wanted to know where you get that booklet.
Okay. Well, there are two options for that. You can go online to practice.
I don't have that.
Okay. I tell you what. Let me give you a phone number.
Mm-hmm.
It's 816-221. Mm-hmm. 1100, and we open up at 8:30 on Monday morning.
And can you buy it and they'll mail it, or can you pick
yes,
it up?
Exactly. All you have to do is call, give your name and address, and we'll be able to make sure we get it in the mail to you.
And how much is it?
It depends. Usually it's around $2.50
mm-hmm.
per copy.
And they'll give me the address. I'll give them my address.
That's correct. Yeah, just go ahead and give that phone number a call, 816-221-1100,
mm-hmm.
and the center will be able to take care of you.
All right. That's the Center for Aging, was that?
That was the Center for Practical Bioethics.
Oh, Center for Practical Bioethics.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Dorothy, good luck.
Thank you.
All right, 576-7798 is the number. Terry Schiavo, 5-year anniversary, and some coverage on that indicates that people, even after that event 5 years ago, are not filling out advance directives at a higher pace than what was before the situation evolved. How do we look at that kind of fact, that people still aren't filling out advance directives?
I think a lot of it has to do with the concern that individuals have that somehow the document might be used against them, or that they're filling it out now and things may change in the future. And what happens if the event that makes them to the point where they can't speak for themselves is in between and they've changed their mind? And so there's this kind of internal conflict we have, that we're just saying, well, yeah, it's important, but I'm not exactly sure what I would say. And, I don't want to predict anything. So we don't do it. That's why it's so important to name someone and then to have the conversation so that that individual can be aware of your preferences and values and your goals, as we discussed earlier. But I think that's some of the reason, and we know that from evidence, from research that we've done, that's true. We also know that as you age, there is a higher participation rate, especially for people in nursing homes and over the age of 60. And there's good studies that say that's where most people finally face the decisions around these issues too. That most of us are in our 80s before we die. So it's more important that older people actually complete them, and usually by then they have some life-limiting illness that's basically a little clearer to them as to how the progression of the disease might advance.
576-7798 is the number. Dr. Kramer?
Well, I think there's another reason why people don't fill out advance directives, and they just don't think about it, and maybe they aren't being asked to do so. And that's why I really believe that doctors, and myself included, need to do a better job about bringing this question up in the office setting, as we're seeing people, before they land in the emergency room with some acute event. So we need events like this, Healthcare mm-hmm. Decisions Day, and we need more people asking people to think about filling out an advance directive.
576-7798 is the number. Dr. Ed Kramer is with us, a family practice physician from Lee's Summit. John Carney, Vice President of Aging and End of Life at the Center for Practical Bioethics. We'll take a break here. Be back after this on News Radio 980 KMBZ. Laurel LeBoux back on Health Talk, sponsored by the Center for Practical Bioethics, raising and responding to ethical issues in health and healthcare for 25 years. For more information about the center and its programs, visit practicalbioethics.org. Practicalbioethics.org. And we're talking about National Healthcare Decisions Day, April the 16th, the day to make your wishes known for medical care during a serious illness or the end of life. John Carney is with us, Vice President of Aging and End of Life at the Center for Practical Bioethics, and Dr. Ed Kramer, a family practice physician from Lee's Summit. 576-7798 is the number if you have a question. And last summer, John, was interesting, wasn't it, with all of the discussion about end of life and how that got connected with a phrase called death panel. So what did you think about all of that?
Well, it was pretty disappointing. I think that the work that was being done to try to fashion some type of opportunity for physicians to have these conversations with patients was really the intention of the legislation at the time. And it kind of got hijacked, the kind of fear-mongering that went with that, and about patients losing control of their decision-making process and government telling them how they're going to have to be cared for, really became a kind of a side story and really destroyed a lot of good intention. I think Dr. Kramer can speak to the importance of the need for physicians to be able to do this, and they really are not allowed to be able to have that conversation with patients and be reimbursed for it, and they need to be. And that's really what the legislation was. It is not in the healthcare reform bill that passed recently. And that isn't the end of the world, but the fact that it didn't get done. But I think it underscores, it really did a good job of bringing it to the public's attention that
that's the positive way of looking at it.
It is.
Sure.
It's an important issue for families and physicians to have these discussions. I still think that most of the discussions are going to happen through physician extenders, nurses, and social workers and other people, especially in the acute care setting, hospital setting. I think Ed really could speak better to the issue about why this is so important for the doctors to have the conversation, because they're the ones that are going to write the orders as to whether or not we do these things. Nurses can facilitate the conversation, but the doctors write the orders.
Okay, well, he's been setting you up there, Dr. Kramer.
He certainly has. Well, first of all, of course, ideally you have this conversation prior to an acute event where you're in the emergency room or you're in the intensive care unit. And oftentimes that leaves basically the doctor's office. The challenge we run into in the doctor's office is the battle we are always fighting against, which is time. And older patients in particular, or patients with multiple medical problems, time is even more critical because you have all kinds of issues that need to be addressed. Some of them, seemingly more important at the moment, or certainly more acute than discussing end-of-life issues and appointing a durable power of attorney and that sort of thing. So time is a big issue, and I think although that's a great place for that conversation to take place, as John mentioned, there's no way of creating enough time and allowing doctors to be reimbursed for that conversation. And so that's one of several reasons probably why it doesn't happen in the doctor's office as often as it should.
576-7798 is the number. Last August, September, when all of this was going on, were people asking you about it as they came through your medical practice?
They were. You know, people are, pretty savvy about, and there's so many different sources of information anymore, and they would come in and they say, well, what about these death panels? You know, how can we support something like that? And so, people do hear these things. And if I, if I hear the term death panel, that's going to get my attention as well.
Sure.
So they're concerned about it. And we try to have a, rational conversation about what's really going on there. And then it's really just trying to provide doctors the opportunity to have this caring conversation with their patients. And at least the people that I talked to, I think they understood that.
Well, it seems like, John, a couple of states are trying to mandate those kinds of conversations. California comes to mind.
Yeah, and I think there are a number of programs. The Physician's Order for Life-Sustaining Treatment, it's basically a paradigm, a new initiative. There are about a dozen states already that are looking at that. Now, it targets people with advanced disease or people frail elderly particularly.
Usually but within nursing homes?
Primarily,
like
yes.
That?
It really sure. is. It's really mm-hmm. for people that are living with advanced diseases. But it goes through a series of very thorough conversations around all types of life-sustaining treatment and then matches the preferences and the goals of the patient to doctor's orders. And it's a really good tool that is being really promulgated around the country. There's states from West Virginia to Washington to New York that have, and California have all adopted paradigms that are doing. And we're actually looking at one in the Kansas City area as well.
Does something like this belong in a piece of legislation, though? Does it belong in law rather than being within something that would be a standard protocol within a medical practice?
Well, we're trying to avoid, in the Kansas City region, we're trying to avoid having to adopt the law. We're trying to do it through standard of care, which is the way that the medical profession functions in terms of a community standard, and this is how we take care of people in our community. And then also within the scope of practice, which means doctors don't order things that they aren't allowed to, and other people are really sitting down and talking to physicians about what's in my best interest, and given my condition, what's really going to help me and hurt me in some cases, like attempts at resuscitation for people who really have advanced bone cancer. It's not a good idea to try to resuscitate somebody. So it really helps us be able to look at a variety of things, including feeding tubes and admission to ICU and those kind of things that are very, very important. And it's an important discussion. And we're trying to do it outside of the legislative arena and try to do it within the scope of practice and being able to have these conversations with physicians.
Dr. Kramer, does it make a difference to you whether a law is a mandate is one thing and whether it's within a scope of practice?
Well, I think the scope of practice approach is a good one. There are limitations to any kind of law that you're trying to craft or trying to follow. And scope of practice really has more to do with, as John mentioned, how do we do things in this community and what's the standard of care. This is really an exceptional program that the center is backing, and I applaud them for this because there is a lot of inconsistency in terms of how a person is treated and with some of these procedures and admissions to intensive care unit, et cetera, oftentimes having resuscitation against their wishes because their wishes are written down and sitting somewhere else instead of going with them to the emergency room and that sort of thing. So I think more of a consistent approach with this sort of policy will be very helpful.
And it really is limited to a very specific population. It's not for everybody. It's for people who are really suffering from some, pretty advanced diseases, and they need to be very clear and they need to have good, thorough conversations with their doctors, and the document reflects that.
We're talking about National Healthcare Decisions Day, April the 16th, the day to make your wishes known for medical care during a serious illness or the end of life. 576-7798 is the number. If you have a question, we'll take a break here. Be back on Health Talk on News Radio 980 KMBZ. Welcome back to Health Talk, sponsored by Midwest Nephrology Consultants and Fresenius Medical Care, 13 clinics and offices throughout the Kansas City metro area. Call 816-276-1700 for more information. We're talking about National Healthcare Decisions Day this evening, and that is Friday, April the 16th. It's a day to make your wishes known for medical care during a serious illness or at the end of life. There are a couple of events that we should talk about. The Shepherd Center of the Northland from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. That's at 4805 Northeast Antioch Road in Suite 9. Elder law attorneys from McCormick and Fracassa and community liaisons from Kansas City Hospice and Palliative Care will provide free information on executing advance directives. And Johnson County Library and St. Luke's Hospital will be collaborating on a program as well. That's from 1 to 5 p.m. on April the 16th. That's the library location at 9875 West 87th Street. And you can always go to practicalbioethics.org, practicalbioethics.org, for a copy of Caring Conversations. John, living wills. People know that term more than they do advance directives. What is a living will? What is an advance directive? And are there differences?
Well, a living will is an advance directive. And living will statutes preceded natural death acts and those kind of things, where it became more important in the 90s for us to actually name somebody. Many states initially... Most all states in the 80s actually passed laws that said it's important for people to say what they do and don't want. That was the living will statutes, and those really became very prominent in the way that we say what it is that we do and don't want in an advance directive. Then natural death acts happened, and the importance of naming an agent really became more important. So in some cases, people will actually complete living wills along with their other estate planning documents through the assistance of an attorney. And that may happen, but there's only a need to fill out one healthcare directive. And a living will actually kind of says the things that I do and don't want, which is the backside of the form that we were talking about earlier. And so the healthcare directive and the living will are kind of the same thing. The appointment of the agent is a separate document that usually says, this is the person I want to make decisions, and here's the authority I give them.
And that's the durable power of attorney for healthcare decisions.
And that then became laws. Most of the states adopted those laws in the 90s. What we're moving towards now is trying to combine the two into one law. And the state of Kansas actually has had some proposed legislation that didn't go anywhere this session, but will probably be reintroduced next year to combine the two together so that there's less confusion around the fact that I've got this document, oh, yeah, but by the way, I've appointed somebody over here, and the two aren't together, and they need to be together, and that's why the recognition of the two being put together in the same document is important.
576-7798 is the number. John, are there ever situations where a living will document is in conflict with an advance directive?
It's possible, and I think it would probably be recognized that the one that's the more recent, should actually be honored, assuming that the conflict would have occurred through a diagnosis or something like that, or just basically more thought given to it over time. But I think the most important issue, again, is if you've got an agent that's named, that person's going to be asked. If there is, you know, some discrepancy between these two other documents, that agent's going to have to reconcile it if the person can't speak for themselves.
Dr. Kramer, do you ever deal with those situations like that whenever a scenario develops within a family, confusion over living will, advance directive, durable power of attorney?
I don't remember actually seeing two separate documents that an individual filled out that were conflicting, but I imagine it certainly could happen. And I just I also want to just interject, if I may, one thought that a lot of people may have about advance directives and living wills. That, well, what, you know, is that more important than if I arrive in the emergency room and I'm able to speak for myself and make decisions and that sort of thing? Well, in that case, what you tell us is what That's we're great. Going to honor, right?
Right.
And so people, I think, are somewhat concerned about writing down something. It just seems so, you know, final. But you can change that, literally change that in writing at any time. And also you can change that by just telling your doctor
verbally
mm-hmm. what you would like to have done or not.
That's right. A living will usually only takes effect when the patient is either in a terminal condition or can't speak for themselves. So mm-hmm. it's if you always assume capacity of the patient to be able to direct their own care, and that's what Ed's talking about. They will always ask you first, and if you can answer, they're not going to worry about the document. And you shouldn't either, because what you say should count if you can speak for yourself.
Well, Dr. Kramer brings up a good point, and it relates somewhat to John and a story with your father, is that their concern about putting something down on paper and having it be permanent mm-hmm. and not with the idea that that can change because situations change over a period of time. And, John, sure. you experienced that with your dad, right?
I did. My dad had a stroke at the age of 52. He died at the age of 77. And 2 years into his stroke, he had to go in and they had to do some surgery on his carotid arteries because of the cholesterol. And at that time, he was young and said that if anything happened during the surgery, he didn't want any extraordinary means to save his life. He'd had a devastating stroke, and he'd lost capacity to be able to provide for his family. And so we knew what his wishes were at the age of 54. About 18 years later, he had to go back in and have the same surgery, and we sat down with him and said, "What do you want?" And he said, "Well, I guess you guys should do everything you can." And I remember my mom and I were his agents, and we both kind of looked at him kind of puzzled and said, you know, I remember her saying, "Neil, what are you saying?" And it really had to do with the fact that over the course of the 18 years, his whole life had changed. His quality of life, as Ed talked about earlier, had the goals of his care, the goals of what he thought was important, had changed dramatically. My mom was his primary caregiver 24/7. Really every need that he had, and he wasn't interested in trying to provide for a family anymore or drive a car or anything like that. And so he had decided that we should do whatever we could to extend his life. And it was a surprise for us at first. We didn't realize that he would have changed that dramatically, but he did, and it was important for us to know that, to be able to speak for him when that decision had to be made. Luckily, the procedure went well, the surgery went well, and he came out fine, but it was really important for us to have that additional conversation.
Sure.
And even though we thought we knew because he told us, you know, years earlier.
John Carney, Vice President of Aging and End of Life at the Center for Practical Bioethics. Dr. Ed Kramer, a family practice physician from Lee's Summit. They are our guests this evening, and we'll take a break right now, our final break of the hour. And we'll be back on Health Talk on News Radio 980 KMBZ. Laurel LeBoux on Health Talk. We are sponsored in part by the Center for Practical Bioethics, raising and responding to ethical issues in health and healthcare for 25 years. For more information about the center and its programs, visit practicalbioethics.org, practicalbioethics.org. We are talking about National Healthcare Decisions Day, Friday, April the 16th. John Carney is with us, Vice President for Aging and End of Life at the Center for Practical Bioethics. Dr. Ed Kramer, a family practice physician from Lee's Summit. So, John, why is National Healthcare Decisions Day important?
Because all of us are going to die, and most of us will not be able to make decisions when that time comes. And it's important for somebody that we trust and we love to make those decisions for us.
And Dr. Ed Kramer, why is it important from a medical perspective?
Well, it makes those decisions not easy, but certainly less difficult when you're around the bedside and have those difficult decisions to make. It gives everybody more peace of mind. They're doing what the individual patient wanted to have done.
And caring conversations is a tool. And John, briefly, what can caring conversations do to help people have that conversation?
It helps you clarify your preferences and values, kind of establishes some goals of care for people who have advanced diseases or have, you know, they know the things that they want. And you can have an opportunity to be able to share that with the person that you're going to name to speak for you.
Well, John Carney is the Vice President of Aging and End of Life at the Center for Practical Bioethics. Dr. Ed Kramer is a family practice physician from Lee's Summit. Thank you, gentlemen, for coming, and have a good week.
Thank you,
Laurel.
Okay, you've been listening to Health Talk, and before we go, we should mention you can get Caring Conversations online at practicalbioethics.org. Caring Conversations on Practical bioethics.org. You've been listening to Health Talk, sponsored by Fresenius Medical Care and Midwest Nephrology Consultants. Be back next week. Have a healthy week, everybody.
Opinions expressed on the preceding program are those of the host and guests and do not represent the opinion of KMBZ or Entercom Kansas City. The views expressed on Health Talk are those of the medical professional only. They are not meant to serve as medical advice. If you have a health issue, see your doctor or visit a clinic.
Highlights from Kansas City's morning news.
Very interesting.
Podcasting at KMBZ.com.
Obama administration aims to push candy and sugary drinks out of school.
Glenn Beck.
That's not a choice. You've taken my choice of a sugary snack away.
Weekdays from 9 to 11 on News Radio 980 KMBZ. This is News Radio 980.